Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh. I'm your host, and I travel around Orlando having conversations with leaders in the ecosystem here and entrepreneurs and people who support the entrepreneurial community here in Orlando. On today's show, we're having a conversation with Rob Penapinto, who is the president of Florentine Strategies, the CEO of Entrepreneurs in Action, CEO of Rally, and on the board of Starter Studio and Rollins, all sorts of stuff. You are in the middle of entrepreneurship here in Orlando. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, your role here in Orlando in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, and tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah. No, I'm happy. I'm happy to. I've lived here now for 25 years, and spent most of it as part of a company which had a, I was fortunate to be part of a great team and a great entrepreneurial story. It was a company that when I joined had about 15, 20 employees and was manufacturing audio cassettes out in Winter Garden in a barn, and was transforming into something. And I was fortunate enough to join at that stage. And my senior partners and the CEO founder at the time was really wrestling with how to transform the company, because clearly audio cassettes was not going to be long for the world. It hung around for a lot longer than we had thought. And we transformed four or five different times, you know, stumbled into some different things, rode the e-commerce wave up and down, found ourselves ultimately. It was always for us, it was always about trying to find businesses that were going to transform from B2B to B2C. And we found ourselves in the health insurance space very early, helping health insurance plans sell individual policies to consumers, which health insurance plans weren't really good at. And we were able to scale that pretty effectively and became the industry leader in that. And I had a chance to, you know, buy into the company and become one of the partners. And we grew it to the point where we had a transaction with a private equity firm in 2006, and then sold the entire company to United Healthcare in 2011. And by that time, we were about 5,000 employees, and about $200 million in revenue. And I hung around at United for about 2 years. Really understood the inner workings of a Fortune 10 company, and for guys that are more entrepreneurial in their thinking, just a tough place.
That's kind of
just a tough place to be. Yeah, and I respect it, because they, you know, the reality is when you're in entrepreneurial businesses, you're an entrepreneur, you're always rolling the ball up the hill. You have to, right? In other words, it's going to roll right over you. Mm-hmm. But in companies like that, the ball moves just fine. And in fact, to some extent, someone who wants to deviate can throw them off balance. They don't really like it. So I left, and at that point, really transformed how I spent my time, and really wanted to give back to this community. I've always believed in the positive force business can be in a community. And I think for this community in particular, as we think about how we move to our next generation, how we continue to evolve and grow, the growth of entrepreneurial businesses is so critical. We have such a young, vibrant population. We've got some issues here around wages and the challenges of making some money here. And I think entrepreneurs and the growth of entrepreneurs can be a critical part of that change in the future. And so that's why I've devoted both what I do professionally and certainly what I'm doing in the community to help raise and drive entrepreneurism in Orlando as part of taking us in our next journey. This should be one of the great communities of the next century, and I think entrepreneurs are a big part of that.
Nice.
Sound so, like my mayoral campaign.
He sounded really great, man. I liked it. So you started as an employee at a place that produces cassette tapes, right? So back in the day, I used to drive around listening to like Zig Ziglar on a cassette.
Yeah, that was the type of stuff we did. It was all spoken word. It was all that type of stuff. Yep.
Like Nightingale Audio and such like
all that. All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you guys had some pivots in business and some transitions and evolutions. You said four of them, which you ended up getting into healthcare
yeah.
and having an acquisition or an exit to United Health or
yep.
a big group. Talk to us about the pivots that you guys have, if you're allowed to, you know, share a little bit of the details. But what I want to take away and give to the audience here is the importance of evolving a business and being willing and able to pivot if things aren't going good or if you see an opportunity. Could you give us some?
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. The you know, first of all, I think I chalk it up to some great leadership and some always thinking about where we needed to go and the future. And to some extent, the luxury also of having that audio cassette manufacturing business, which kind of became a VC for us, right? We had an internal operating business, which was an advantage a lot of other companies don't have. So I don't take that for granted. But for us, the pivots were always around a foundation that the world was moving from B2B to B2C. And so what were industries that we could disrupt while that change was happening? In the late 90s, it was about the rise of e-commerce. And so we were approached, you know, we'd have these companies that would come in and say, I'm going to be a $1 billion company in 3 years. And by that time, we had built a fulfillment and a warehouse operation. And the call center business actually started out of, well, if you're shipping an order, then you need someone to take the order, right? And so we built our technology capabilities around that. So we were a big e-commerce shop in the late 1990s, where we were setting up websites, taking orders, and fulfilling orders. Well, people forget now that in 1999, 2000, 2001, that whole business crashed. I mean, this is now the second wave of e-commerce. That whole first generation largely failed, right? And had to restart and relaunch. And so we went up and down on that. But by that time, we had built a call center business and realized we could scale that. And again, looked for industries that were moving away from B2B into B2C. But then we caught a headwind in that business where a lot of that work was moving offshore. And we didn't want to be part of that. We were always at the higher end of the value chain in terms of really creating relationships. And that didn't jive in an offshore environment at the time. And so the next place was, what are industries that we felt would not be disrupted by this change to offshore and the commoditization of the technology and the call center parts of our business? And that's what led us to healthcare. The challenge for us in healthcare was we were super early. I mean, we were selling insurance on the internet through Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida in 1999.
Wow.
Very early. We were, but we knew that's where the market was going to go. And it really became an issue of, how do you get from point A to point B, and how long will that journey take? And it was, you know, it was a good 5 or 6 years before that marketplace really started to scale, largely because of some regulatory changes in Medicare. But philosophically, it was always around this concept of, we were very good at higher end interactions and building technologies that facilitated a business to consumer. We just had to find the right places to go. And ultimately, we got there.
Yeah. Now, when you started as an employee, so you went from employee to partner. And
yeah.
I'd love to hear that, how the mindset shift in that. Actually, let's pause right there. What is the difference in mindset and responsibilities between employee mindset and partner mindset?
For me, I don't know that it was much of a change in mindset, which is probably why I ultimately had the opportunity. So first of all, I am grateful for the fact that there were owners and partners in that business who created that opportunity. Because as you know, in a lot of small privately held companies, you don't get that opportunity. In larger companies, you sometimes do. Now, in my case, it was, you had to put cash on the barrelhead, which I was very happy to do. So, I mean, I put some skin in the game. But I think that, frankly, had I not had that mindset early on, which is very easy to have when you're in a company of that size, right? I mean, again, we were 20 employees. I was living and breathing it every single day. And I think having that mindset then created the opportunity for me to do that. The change, of course, then becomes that you're there, right? I mean, an employee to some extent, certainly in this day and age, has the ability to go somewhere and do something else. Although I never saw myself doing that prior, there's no doubt the minute that those checks were written and I was there from that perspective, I'm here.
Yeah.
Right. So it definitely does change that mindset. So it didn't change, I think, it didn't change what I did on a day-to-day basis in trying to move the business forward. But yeah, I mean, it's a different level of commitment. But I think the positive one, and I think why you see a lot of organizations always thinking about how do they create opportunity from an equity or an upside perspective for people who are critical to the growth of the business. And I think business owners and leaders are smart to do that.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's awesome, especially for someone who has an entrepreneurial lean or bent where they want to take charge, they want to take responsibility, they want to grow and expand and be a part of the hyper growth of that. For someone like that, I think it's a great way for them to get started, work as an entrepreneur or an employee, make some money, create some stability in your life, but take on more responsibility, get involved more and create more value. For those employees out there who feel that they are entrepreneurial and currently have a job, do you have any advice for them in terms of, you know, being an employee and really cultivating that relationship and growing that to potential partner one day?
Well, again, I think you've got to gauge the environment as to whether there's an opportunity to do that or not, right? Sometimes there is, sure. sometimes there isn't. So I think that's the starting point. And sometimes it's, you know, again, it's also communicating your desire to you know, perhaps take that next level and be able to do that. And listen, for some people that opportunity may not exist. And then I think the decision is, do you sort of strike out on your own and start something and take all the risk that comes with?
Yeah.
In certain respects, it's easier to do these days. Because you can, you know, there are the gig economy and other sorts of things allow for some flexibility, I think, to be much more entrepreneurial in your thinking than perhaps, you know, 20 or 30 or certainly 50 years ago. But
sure. So
there's no doubt, I would say this, there's no doubt though, particularly for growth companies, you know, talent is so important, right? So I think smart entrepreneurs as they're and executives as they're scaling their companies, I think do look and do recognize the importance of keeping their core team there and allowing them to grow and create different opportunities for them, because it's, you know, it's how they're going to grow too. If you're going to scale an endeavor, you're going to need some talent to do it.
Sure. So your company was acquired. You guys went from 15 employees to 5,000 working for a Fortune 10 company. You did about 2 years there, and then you said, okay, it's time for me to go on. Around what time of, you know, what year was this where you decided to step out on your own and get back into entrepreneurship, traditional entrepreneurship?
So it was probably about a year in.
Yeah.
The acquisition happened in 2011.
Okay.
After about a year, for me, I started to realize that long-term this was, you know, probably time for me to do something else. And look, I was fortunate enough that I was in a position to be able to think about doing that too. But initially, it was actually pretty exciting because then, you know, the flip side is when you're in an entrepreneurial company and you're growing, and again, we had gotten fairly big, but there are some real strength and power that big companies have. And so you get excited by the fact that, oh my God, now I have all these tools and these resources and capital behind me. Think what we can do, and particularly in healthcare, which at that time still is. It was in a very transformational moment. So I think there was a lot of excitement initially around here's what we could do. And by the way, I mean, I think United Healthcare does some exciting, very transformational things in healthcare. So I mean, they're a very innovative company in many ways. But again, it's around the things that they sort of pick and choose, which I think is absolutely the right decision for them. So this is, I think they made the right decisions.
Yeah.
So it's not had they only done what we wanted them to do? That's certainly not my case at all. But it just became apparent to me that the things that I wanted to do, and frankly, there was a personal component for me too, right? I'd spent a lot of years traveling and my kids were getting older and, you know, I wanted to be here more. So there was, you know, there's a lot of components to it. But it was about a year, and then the last year was kind of a transition.
You knew within a year, you're like, yeah. Okay, I need to find my successor, and I need to make my exit
yeah.
of the company.
Yeah.
So taking the leave.
Yeah.
Where'd you land? Like, what happened to your mindset? Like, what did you want to accomplish?
Well, again, a lot of it for me was community focused.
Okay.
So the number one piece for me was I knew whatever I was going to do, it was going to have an element of moving the community forward on issues that were important to me. And so that's where I've, you know, that's really where I've structured my time.
Okay.
And a lot of it's been a lot of volunteer work and civic work, and all that's come down to, for me, it was about a strategy of what I wanted to do.
Yeah. You knew the direction.
I knew.
You knew you wanted to support the community. You wanted to do, you know, lift up the community in civic and nonprofit, for profit. But you wanted to move that needle. So you didn't know exactly, but you knew the direction and the strategy that you wanted to accomplish, right? So what did that first thing become?
Part of it was some things I was already involved in, and just having some more time to really focus on them, nonprofit boards and organizations I was part of. Florentine came out of really having to create a structure for the types of things I was doing, whether it was consulting or investing or partnerships that I was working on. And you know, Rally and Entrepreneurs in Action really came out of starting to be involved in social enterprise initiatives and really seeing opportunities to grow and to scale those, and again to put some structure and formality and a social venture fund and some funding behind it. So you know, as inevitably happens, you start to see specific opportunities as you go down the path, and then you really, you know, hopefully engage in the ones that you think you can make an impact on and really grow and scale. So that was really the plan. But again, it's always been around this thought around, this community has done a lot for me. I'm very grateful for that. My kids live here. This is home for me. How do we continue to make this the place it should become? And where can I help, and where can I make an impact in things that matter?
You mentioned, I hear words, and this is getting really hot right now in the marketplace, you know, words like impact, social entrepreneur. Then there's like for-profit, non-profit, hybrids, right? But like, what is this term social enterprise?
There's a lot of different definitions of it. So, I mean, I will tell you how we look at it here at Rally.
Okay.
And how I think about it is, it is an entity, a business, that is sustainable from a revenue perspective, largely without the need for philanthropic support. So it's got a sustainable revenue model in what it does, and it is directly causing or impacting a social issue. So it is not, for example, a company that gives 10% of its profits back to a charity. That's a great company, and I love that they do that. That's being a good corporate citizen, but it's not a social enterprise. So that's the definition for us. We are agnostic here as to whether something's a for-profit or a not-for-profit. That's just the structure and the vehicle mm-hmm. that they've created. But they've got to have that sustainable revenue model, and they've got to be impacting a social issue, either locally or on a global basis.
Okay. And this is through your vehicle of Rally, which is here in Winter Park, Florida, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about Rally. How did it get started? You know, maybe tell us about some of the groups that you are passionate about serving, or some of the social issues.
Rally started, Rally is really an evolution. Get to your question before about how, you know, how did you go about these things. So two things had happened. I had, along with some, so I'm one of the organizations I'm involved in at the board level. I'm currently the chair of the board, is the Central Florida Foundation. And the foundation is an amazing group here in town that drives a lot of the public-private philanthropy and a lot of community impact on issues like homelessness and educational scholarships and school programs, and essentially any large philanthropic endeavor the foundation is involved in some way, shape, or form. And we were having nonprofits come to us saying, hey, we see that philanthropy is moving in a new direction. We know we need to change our business model. We have some ideas around it. Can you help us? And at the same time, we were trying to get entrepreneurs more involved in the foundation, because one of the things the foundation does well is we're a repository for folks who have created private wealth and how they want to impact their philanthropy. We're a vehicle for that. But entrepreneurs need to know who we are. And so we were trying to find ways to get them involved, and frankly, they didn't want to sit on our board. So we thought about what could we do that would allow them to do what they do best, which is to think outside the box and help solve problems. And so we paired those two issues together, and we started this group called Entrepreneurs in Action. And there were six of us who launched that program. And we created a free consulting process where we would initially work with not-for-profits, and then we extended it to for-profits, where we were helping them explore whether they had sustainable revenue models. It's a great program. We work with organizations like Lighthouse Works and Harbor House. I'm very proud of the work we did there. Tough to scale, though. I couldn't get enough folks to commit the level of time for these consulting engagements, because we were spending hours upon hours. I won't call them McKinsey, but they were detailed consulting engagements. We also didn't have a funding vehicle, so we had no money to provide to these entities to help them move forward. At the same time, a gentleman named Ben Hoyer, who's a great social entrepreneur who you should talk to at some point, hopefully will. He runs the Credo coffee shops here in town. He had started a grassroots organization called Rally Makers, where he was doing some informal mentorship and some very small dollars to social enterprises here, but small. He was struggling because he couldn't scale his program either. And there's so much social enterprise activity actually happening here in Central Florida with organizations like Clean the World, with what Lyft Orlando is doing, with Rebuild Globally. And so we really see this as a community that has all the makings of a social entrepreneurship hub. We just needed a vehicle to help scale it and raise its awareness. And that's how Rally was formed. So it was a partnership between Entrepreneurs in Action, the Central Florida Foundation, Ben's organization, Downtown Credo. We're sitting here on the campus of Rollins College, and Rollins was an amazing partner helping us develop our educational curriculum. And Rollins has a deep ties to social enterprise. The city of Orlando, because although we're technically based in Winter Park, a lot of our companies come from the city, and Mayor Dyer and his team have been very supportive as to what we're trying to do on a regional level here. And some great corporate partners like Tupperware and JP Morgan Chase and Greenberg Traurig, Witham, who really see this as an opportunity to make a positive impact on our community, create some higher wage jobs and some growth in the area. So that's how Rally got formed. And we've been at it. We run two formal accelerator classes a year, and then some different types of mini programs in between, and we're now in our third cohort. And then alongside of that, we took our old Entrepreneurs in Action group, spun us out into a for-profit benefit corporation, and have raised a social venture fund from 12 investors here locally who are investing in for-profit social enterprises. Most of them come through the Rally program, but they don't need to be.
Okay. So give me an idea of what could someone who has this heart to create an impact. They want to create a sustainable revenue model where they're not dependent on just donations to keep the lights on, right? So let's just say I have this company and I'm doing those things, or I have the desire to do those things, and I look at Rally. What could I expect for me and my business going through Rally? What does a program look like? What kind of things could I expect going through it?
Yeah, so it's a 4-month program. At the beginning, we will help you focus on both the critical aspects of what you need from a business perspective, but also from a social mission impact perspective. So we've actually taken the business model canvas and created, or the lean business model canvas, and created a social business model canvas.
No kidding.
Yeah. Which focuses on the critical aspects of both your business model and your social impact. And that then becomes the tenets of the things that we want you to work on throughout the program. And sometimes they change, because these are small, early stage companies. But essentially it creates focus on the output. And then we run some formal curriculum. I mean, we're sitting here today at Rally because I just gave a talk to the current cohort. And so they come in once a week and listen to a featured speaker. Ben and Kyle Steele, who runs the program on a day-to-day basis, have weekly check-ins with the teams to keep them on focus and point on their three critical factors we're trying to drive them towards. We pair them with mentors. And our mentorship program is pretty interesting because it's actually a paid mentorship program. You have to pay, you have to invest in Rally to become a mentor.
So if I wanted to be a mentor and I wanted to help I have to invest.
You would have to make a philanthropic, you'd have to make a charitable donation to Rally, which is a nonprofit, to further our mission. Yeah, it's actually part of our sustainable revenue model is this paid mentorship program. So all of our mentors are either companies or individual philanthropists, entrepreneurs, business leaders who want their philanthropy. They want to engage in their philanthropy in a different way and actually work deeply with these companies. So yeah,
so
we'll generally pair you with two, based upon the type of expertise that you need.
Yeah, now I know my listeners and some of them, you know, are driving around right now and they go, okay, here's a company that's investing money to actually do work. So I'm paying money to do work and to be a mentor. Why would they do that, right? So that might be throwing up some questions at some people. So why would someone give?
Yeah. I think essentially because they want to engage in philanthropy in a different way, right? It's not about writing. It's not only about writing the check.
That's easy, right?
In some cases, it's easier, right? Yeah. I mean, certainly in terms of time, if you've got the resource, yeah.
Yeah.
But they want to be involved, right? They want to work hands-on. They don't want to sit on a board. Again, they just they don't want to check. They want to see the impact and influence the impact and move the impact forward.
So be a part of the impact.
Exactly.
And so they could leverage the resources, the energy of these entrepreneurs. They could give money and they could give their time and see the social impact business grow through their contribution of time, right, and money. See, that's really interesting. So give me some ideas of the kind of people that you guys accept in terms of mentors. Like, because I'm sure you just can't accept anybody. But what do you look for in terms of mentors?
So they come from a couple of categories. So one, on the corporate side, we've created a leadership development aspect of this. So in many cases, if you're one of the larger corporations in town, you may want some of your young up-and-coming executives who may be subject matter experts in finance or marketing or social media to start to engage in the community. So we get some of the best and brightest of their younger up-and-coming executive team to become involved as mentors. And that process, you know, we screen, right, to make sure we're getting the right subject matter expertise we need. But again, for those folks, in their case, the company's writing the check, but they're getting involved in an organization at a much deeper level, again, than just sitting on a nonprofit board. So there's that group, and then the rest are you know, either committed business leaders, entrepreneurs, or philanthropists who are looking at their investment and their impact in a different way.
Yeah.
So it's generally a blend of those two, which by the way creates some real energy amongst our mentorship team because we've got a really good cross section of some really fascinating and interesting folks who are our mentors, and it pairs well with the companies.
Sure. So as a business owner myself, I can invest money in Rally, and then I could be a mentor, and I can impact something. Let's just say there's, you know, I'm passionate about ending homelessness, right? So I can work with a group that you have at Rally, and they could help create the impact. But instead of me just throwing money or writing a check to, you know, end homelessness or try to start solving that problem, I could be a part of the solution.
You might be able to help build a company that has a plan to help impact homelessness.
Ah, so right? That's incredible.
And in fact, one of the things we're probably going to do this year is, so right now, obviously, organizations come to us with their idea and we help them scale. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we've been talking about from the very beginning is how do you flip that model? So how do you work, say, for example, with the city of Orlando and say, what are three or four really pressing community issues that you'd like to put some innovation and thought behind? And so we're talking about using our rally makers, which is what we call that investor group that we're talking about as a legacy to Ben's old organization. How do we take those rally makers and come up with some concepts that could be built into businesses that then, in more of, say, a startup weekend type of environment, we could take to entrepreneurs and say, here are a couple of ideas around homelessness or affordable housing or urban farming or food deserts. Hmm. Create businesses out of them and we'll invest in them.
See, that's really interesting because it's backwards of what most funds do, whether venture capital or accelerators or whatever. You're going to the source and you're saying, what are your problems? It's like going to a customer, right? Orlando, the city of Orlando is your customer. City of Orlando, what's your problem? And they go, okay, our problem is education and homelessness and poverty or whatever the case may be. And you go, okay, if we build it, will you help us fund it or will you help us be a part of it? And then you guys go find the right people and you start building for the customer already, right?
Right.
That's genius. And you said you have a fund component, like a vehicle that helps fund?
So we actually have two funds.
Okay.
So, because remember, we're looking at both for-profits and not-for-profits. So, and a not-for-profit might need some seed capital to get them to the sustainability of the business that they're pitching.
Sure.
So we have a nonprofit grant fund that sits at the Central Florida Foundation that could make seed grants to a not-for-profit. And then we have the EIA Social Venture Fund, which invests in early stage social, for-profit social enterprises. These are generally $25,000, $50,000 investments. And our goal is to get them from stage one to stage two, because ultimately what we want to do is we want to be able to go to the broader angel venture community and say, hey, look, for-profit social enterprises are investable. And they've come through our rally program, may or may not have, but in many cases they've come through that program. We've invested in them. We've been with them for 2 to 3 years. They need some more capital now. Let's take them to more traditional venture capital. Or we make, you know, at some point we may decide to launch a second fund to make add-on investments. But right now it's a seed fund that's designed to take a company from, you know, point A to point B when we can take them out for capital again.
Very cool. And then you'll help them approach the VCs and say,
absolutely,
they've gone through a program. These are the milestones
absolutely
that they hit. To go from here to that next level, they'll need this much capital. But it's almost like you guys certifying them, right?
I think that's definitely part of it. Most of us who are investors in the EIA fund are investors in other funds or are making other investments. So hopefully we can help take those companies to other sources of capital if and when they're ready.
So let's talk nonprofit first.
Yep.
For a nonprofit to get a grant, to get some money to create sustainability and to kind of take their nonprofit from where they are to, you know, a larger growth path, what does a nonprofit need in order to get a grant from an organization like Central Florida?
Yeah, so the way the process works is the final output of each of our cohorts is a pitch night. And the rally makers are the judges of the pitch night. We generally pick one winner. And if that winner is a nonprofit, which by the way has not happened yet, both cases, our first two pitch nights, the winner has turned out to be a for-profit. But if it's a not-for-profit, they would get a recommendation for a grant from the foundation. If it's a for-profit, then there's a recommendation made to the investment committee of EIA to make the investment. It's not guaranteed. There's some cross-pollination between those two groups, but it's a separate organization, both of which are independent. So that's the process. Or They certainly can just come as individuals and present and pitch. On the for-profit side, there are a couple of investments that we're looking at today that did not come through Rally. Although clearly our desire is to promote the Rally program.
Sure. So on the nonprofit side, like what are some things that you look for in terms of the people or maybe the metrics or the mission?
Yeah.
What do you look for before?
The people's an important part of it, right? Because I think that sometimes in the not-for-profit, this happens less now as we become more established, but we would have nonprofits that were approaching us, viewing us as just a grant resource, and really weren't ready or didn't understand the change in philosophy and business. They just started as a place they can get some money. So really, we are looking. You probably wouldn't get it'd be hard for you to get into Rally if the executive leadership didn't already have a path towards a sustainable revenue model. You just wouldn't have gotten past that gate, which is why the program is so important. But honestly, we even look at the board, their board membership, and how ready is their board for that type of change. Listen, I serve on a lot of nonprofit boards, so I've said this before. It is amazing to me how often when seasoned, smart, savvy business leaders go sit on a nonprofit board, they almost, to some extent, check their business hat and put on their governance hat. It's like they're all the expertise they have in the outside world doesn't always come to play when they sit on that nonprofit board.
No kidding.
So we look for that, right? They just become about, you know, purely philanthropic. They come from the heart. I mean, all the right things. But sometimes they have a struggle with understanding a social enterprise inside of a not-for-profit, and they sort of, you know, they check that. They just check it at the door. And so if we see some hesitancy there, that's not... It makes it harder because they're probably not going to be able to make the changes at the board level to move the investment forward. But that's why Rally is so important, because it filters a lot of that out for us.
Nice. You know, I think that your model in taking smart business leaders and getting them into the action, right, of the business, right, becoming mentors and getting them into the game and into the trenches with these entrepreneurs that are making a difference, I think that fixes that problem of, you know, the governance problem, right, where in the business world, I'm rock and roll, and I come into the nonprofit, you know, to serve and to coach, and I become too soft, right, or I don't really... invest my full brain and power to help this thing grow. I think the mentorship thing is really working. Have you had any success stories that have come through this, or things that have really created an impact that you guys have seen measurably through Rally and what you guys are doing?
It's early, but I think we're starting to see some of the things in the ecosystem that we had wanted to see. And we're starting to see that we're actually helping more organizations, even if we don't directly give them dollars. So for example, I think most of the entities that came through our first cohort have gotten some sort of philanthropic funding or other types of funding or partnership or mentorship, because someone on our team has wanted to stay engaged. So. The Mustard Seed, for example, was in our first cohort, and I know one of our key partners, a great organization here called DDC Construction, has done a lot of philanthropic work with them on their not-for-profit side. We've seen the winner of our first pitch night, Omnimodal, which is a company that's providing more real-time visibility and connectivity to mass transit, right? Because transit is a critical issue when you think about underserved populations and ties to employment and education. It's a real social issue, and we've seen them. They've gone into the Starter Studio program, and I think are, you know, hopefully maybe looking at some funding there. So they've continued on the ecosystem in a broader way. They're working with Lynx and the city of Orlando to some extent. I think through what's happened at Rally. So we're starting to see some of those, you know, green shoots that we helped them start to really blossom and grow, and hopefully we'll continue to see that.
Nice. Yeah. Now, when I walked in this morning to Rally, I saw a group full of passionate people that We're going through one of your courses. I actually walked in the middle of you talking, so I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah.
But people were learning from what you were, you know, teaching them. But there was probably a group of like maybe four companies here.
Yeah.
Give us an idea of the types of companies that you might have going through this cohort now.
Gosh, it is a huge, it's a blend. So we have two women who are running a nonprofit where they're using yoga as a means to helping what they would call women in transition, and the importance of yoga as a vehicle to helping women move their lives forward. Completely a not-for-profit. I mean, they would admit, I was going through some sales funnel work with them today, and one of the partners said, I just want to help people. This stuff is so great to me. And so for her, it's about how can we help her understand the importance of those metrics to her desire to help people.
Yeah. So she could have a bigger impact
Correct.
To help people, right?
Right. And so she got it. One of the other companies is doing a battery, wants to recycle computer and cell phone batteries to help develop, in a sense, mini power plants for the third world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some Rollins folks who've won the whole prize and, again, are just in the Starter Studio program right now. And they're struggling with all the things, you know, both their supply chain and their customer base. Another woman in there who's got an amazing business in providing support for mass transit for Lynx and MARTA in Atlanta around helping seniors get transported. She wants to change it into more of a rideshare type of program. We're helping her build that business model. We've got a company that is Boston-based, our first one outside of Orlando, that actually has developed an application that can help determine whether someone has tuberculosis through their cell phone.
No way.
And how we're trying to help them scale that business. Wow. So it's, that's awesome. So we're working with grassroots nonprofits that are helping to make impacts directly in Orlando and our community, all the way up to things that could really have significant impact across the globe. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. And now, I know that you like a holistic view of, you know, civic work and community. Are there any causes, maybe not a specific organization, but are any causes that are real close to your heart that you are really passionate about giving and investing in and really growing?
Yeah, there's really two. There's really two right now. And I'm going to sound like my mayoral campaign because they're the two things I talked about a lot of times. I mean, the importance of diversifying this economy, I think, is so critical to our future, because I think that a lot of the challenges we face here come out of the wonderful things our tourism service industry create for us. So I want them to continue to grow, but to have other things around it, which I think, you know, increase wage and create more of a tax base here. So, and I think entrepreneurism is such a critical part of that. So I'm heavily involved in a lot of activity, not just at Rally, but at Starter Studio and at Rollins and other places, and some now broader community initiatives around how do we really grow this entrepreneurial ecosystem in a way that rivals what's happening. I don't want to say we're going to be Silicon Valley, but if you look at what's happened in Boston, in Austin, in Cleveland, in Pittsburgh, in Nashville, and how for different reasons, but they've been able to really come from a community standpoint to help transform their communities in a way that better the entire community. I think that's really critical in the next 20 years of growth here. So I'm heavily involved and very passionate about initiatives around that, which is why, you know, why Rally is important to me. And the other one is this affordable housing situation, because it's bad. It's an acute issue nationally. But it's critical here as well, and I think a significant potential break on our growth in this community. A stat that I look at all the time is how low we are in millennial house purchasing, which tells me that young professionals at a certain part of their life are thinking about whether this is the place they're going to stay for the next 20 to 25 years and build their wealth and build their families and build their businesses. And so we need to address that. And so I'm working with some different organizations, and I'm putting some people together to start to come up with some local thoughts and hopefully strategies and policies around that. Because look, to me, at the end of the day, where you work and where you live are just such pillars to your overall life, and I think so critical to who we should be and who we can be over the next 30 years. So I think you'll probably find that most of the things I'm involved in probably have some sort of tie to those. Excellent. Those two things.
What question should I have asked you that I totally missed and I didn't ask you?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, you asked a lot. We went sort of went
we went through the whole story, right?
In a lot of different ways. So I don't know if there's anything specific you didn't ask me.
Why do you, in terms of planting and staying and living and thriving and investing, why do you choose Orlando rather than go to an Austin or Boston or Silicon Valley?
So I moved here from New York City. I grew up in New York City. And, you know, I think I came here for the same reason a lot of us came here. Florida is viewed as a place of opportunity. And I think it is that. I think it is that place, a place where you can start a new life, build a better life. You don't need to have lived here 100 years. Someone was using the story the other day in another meeting I was in that, you know, if you want to join the Metropolitan Museum of Art Board, you probably need to spend 20 years on a subcommittee, have written a big check, hope that someone who's on the board dies and their grandson isn't waiting in line. Whereas down here, if you want to be on the board of the Orlando Museum of Art, go call the director of the Orlando Museum of Art. They'd probably find a way to plug you in, right? This is a community where people who want to stand up and help can be very impactful. And to me, that's, you know, I think that's one of our strengths. It's also the type of community that I want to be part of, that I want my kids to be part of. Beyond all the, you know, the easy stuff around, you know, the weather's great and there's no income tax here, all the, you know, sort of the brochureware stuff. But this is a pretty, I mean, this place is dramatically different than the one that I moved here 25 years in very, very positive ways. And again, I think can be even a more dramatically positive place in the next 20 years. It's just a fun, great place to be, community to be part of right now. And if I can make it a little bit of a better place every day, that's all the better.
That's excellent.
Why are we here?
I love it. So if there's a mentor, a business owner, or even a corporate person out there who's really interested in not just writing a check, but becoming involved in mentorship through Rally, or if there's a social entrepreneur who's interested in going through this program, where can people go to find out more and connect with you?
So they can go to our website, which is rallysea.com.
Okay.
Or certainly they can, you know, feel free to reach out directly to me on either LinkedIn or my emails, robpanapinto@florentinestrategies.com.
Okay.
We'd love to talk to folks.
Yeah, we'll include those links in the show notes below. But Rob, this has been a really fun conversation, learning more about social enterprises and social impact, things that are going on here in Orlando in our backyard, and making an impact into the world globally. So really appreciate the work you're doing and your time sharing with our audience.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, listening into this Orlando Entrepreneur Show, I hope you've enjoyed this. I'm going to encourage you to go to the show notes right now and connect with Rob on LinkedIn and visit their website to learn more about how you could get involved to make an impact here in Orlando. All right, guys, I hope you guys have a wonderful day, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.